Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
With the new book, Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise, philosopher and musician David Rothenberg chronicles the fascinating and elusive patterns of the insect world. In the spring of 2013, the cicadas will return on their 17-year cycle, the longest gestation period of any animal. Their deafening sound upon their arrival is familiar to most Americans, a nostalgic reminder of sweltering, lazy summer evenings. The cicadas become the backbeat of summer. They enjoy heat and they perform their most spirited singing during the hottest hours of the day. In looking at cicadas as well as other humming, clicking, and thrumming insects, Bug Music is the first book to really consider the radical notion that we humans learned rhythm and dance from insect sounds that have surrounded us for millions of years. It's a great pleasure to welcome David Rothenberg to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
What brought you to this subject?
Well, you know, I was maybe 18 years ago, I moved from New York City to the Hudson Valley. And there in 1996, instead of the usual time when cicadas come in late summer, in early summer that year, millions of cicadas emerged and were just, taking over in late spring, early summer. And you heard this sound, and I was thinking, like, what is this? How come I had never heard this before? I thought I was familiar with late summer cicadas, but then I learned about the famed 17-year cicadas, the periodic cicada, or known as the magicicada, that comes out once every 17 years. And this year, they're coming back to the Hudson Valley and much of the WAMC listening area.
And what do we expect from that? Does it change from cycle to cycle?
Not really. In probably early to mid-June in our area, we're going to hear so much noise, so much sound, it's going to seem totally off. It'll sound like a rainforest. You'll hear each individual cicada is going, fero, fero. When you hear millions of them, you just hear a tone. Just, it's like the thrumming sound of a jungle somewhere, but it'll be right in our midst. And this is this phenomenon that is so rare. It happens once every 17 years. And for me, it's the sign of the great relevance of insects and their sound world as a whole to the whole sense of rhythm and the human love of both rhythm and also noise. We actually love noise, even though sometimes it bothers us. We also seek it out. We make our musical instruments noisier, plug our electric guitars into fuzz boxes. We like kind of complex sound, and we've always had a love-hate relationship with it.
So what I love about the book is that you bring us these sounds and tell us a little bit about them, the subtitle of the book being How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. How do you believe that is the case?
Well, what I'm doing is considering the possibility rather than proving, but considering the possibility, the likelihood that human music evolved in the context of all this bug sounds all around. As we were figuring out what music was going to be, we heard the thrumming rhythms and patterns of crickets going boop, 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 and katydids, all these kind of rhythms going on around us. As we were figuring out what human music was going to be, these sounds were already in our midst. They're millions of years older than human music, and they were there right when people were trying to figure out what kind of music we wanted to make.
What is it about the individual insects that allows them to make such beautiful music and such beautiful rhythms?
Well, cicadas have a unique way of making sound. They're able to make such loud sounds. They have these organs sort of shaped like the head of a drum called timbals on the side of their abdomen, and they just vibrate those at an astonishing rate and produce all this noise. Not everyone thinks it's beautiful, but it is definitely... I think once you learn about it, once you pay attention to it, it definitely grabs your attention. And the males are making this sound. They want the female cicadas to pay attention. And for years, we thought that the females were kind of passive in terms of making sound. But last 17-year cycle, two scientists, David Marshall and John Cooley, discovered, in fact, that it's not so simple. That the females have to make this very tiny, precise wing flick, a kind of clicking sound of their wings, very quiet, exactly one-third of a second after the male stops singing. Only then do the males get the signal they should approach and move towards the mating possibility.
To me, the most incredible thing, and this is the same actually goes for peepers as well, is that something so small can be so loud.
That's right. It's kind of remarkable that a small insect can make so much noise, and that they need to make so much noise, that this need somehow evolved. Elsewhere in the book, I talk about a tiny water beetle called the lesser water boatman that underwater makes a sound nearly as loud as a whale or as loud as a rock concert. And he's doing this by vibrating his penis underwater. Totally what you don't expect, this tiny insect making this much noise.
And you only hear it above the water or below?
The lesser water boatman is so loud that you could hear it above the water, but you only hear the great volume by sticking an underwater microphone. And then you hear a lot of insects make very strange sounds under the surface of a pond or in a marsh, things we don't realize are there. But the volume of this particular sound is just surprising. It's just way off the charts.
I mean, obviously, you write about the cicada, and that's a fascinating insect that a lot of us know about. But you have found incredible insects in the process of your research that I assume even you didn't know were capable of such music and sound.
Absolutely, much of it I knew nothing about. I didn't know that tree hoppers, tiny little insects that live on branches and stalks of plants, that they kind of tap their abdomen against the surface of the stalk or the trunk of trees, and they send vibrations that other tree hoppers pick up on. Some of these vibrations are among the most complicated sounds any insects make. Or we have we have the pine bark beetles that are destroying hundreds of thousands of acres of forests in the western United States, and these actually have a complicated acoustic communication that we could only learn about by sticking microphones into the trunks of trees and hearing all the stuff that's going on. Nobody had any idea this was happening. Fruit flies, even, a very familiar insect to science. Most people, even scientists who study them, were not aware that fruit flies sing songs like birds, like cicadas and crickets. Mm. The males are singing to attract the attention of females.
One of the things I really appreciated about the book is obviously a lot of us can hearken to those sounds, but you include sonograms in many cases, and then that really gives you a visual idea of how strong and how musical these insects are.
That's right. A sonogram is an image created by scientists, a technique 50 years ago or so, to print out mapping the frequency of the pitches of the sounds against the time, and they can show you the structure of a sound, the acoustic structure, in a way that's very hard for us to hear or describe. But to visually print it out, you can see, for example, how organized, how structured, and how precise the sound of, say, a scissor grinding cicada is, the ones that go shh, how something that looks like noise or sounds like a kind of modulated noise, and we hear it. When you print it out, you see the precise structure of that noise, and you can see how it's really very exact, nothing random at all.
It's had an impact on your music.
Absolutely. I think spending a few years taking these sounds more seriously, it started to change the sounds I consider as being musical. And on the CD, also called Bug Music, released at the same time as the book, I really start exploring kinds of sounds that previously I might have turned away from. Very kind of buzzy, thrumming sounds, insect-like tones made, in some cases, completely electronically, some cases sampled from the insects themselves. Some of the tracks in the CD are my examples of performing live along with different insects, cicadas in several cases, or In one piece, we have the overtone singer Timothy Hill, who also lives in the Hudson Valley, singing along with a whole hillside full of nighttime singing crickets and katydids, and you hear how his overtones blend in with the sounds of the bugs in a kind of new sort of interspecies whole. A kind of music is made connecting, and no one species can make it alone. You have 10 or so species of insect and one species of human joining in to create something nobody could do on their own.
You write in, toward the end of the book, music might be the greatest form of poetry since words can never completely explain it. In its greatest mystery, it may be accessible to all living things, even those we cannot talk to or control. And that struck me because we're so used to that control.
Yes, I think it's risky to try and make music with another species, be it birds, whales, or bugs, because once you do it, you're going beyond the familiar rules of what's allowed, what people like to hear, what birds like to hear, what cicadas like to hear, and you have to make it work, you have to learn from the aesthetic of these other species and try and sort of expand the sense of what you think is musical. And I think that's a valuable experiment for any musician to do, to try to play along with sounds you don't quite understand. Just as we can easily, as musicians, sit down with somebody from Mongolia or New Guinea or Japan who doesn't speak a language that we can speak. We can make music together because music somehow crosses cultural lines in ways we don't quite understand, but we know it happens. So it might also cross species lines as well.
What does it take for us to understand that sound? How it's created or beyond that?
I think we have to spend time listening to it, really spend time with it. You learn how it's made, that might help you, but no, there's no substitute for just going out there and listening. When the 17-year cicadas come to our area, you know, just don't just say, oh, what is this racket? I'm going to slam the door and go inside. Go outside. Listen to it. Let them crawl all over you. Take it all in. And then when you start to, it first sounds like a wash of noise, but when you start to pay attention, and if you, say, read what's going on in the book, you'll realize that there's 9 separate sounds you're hearing. Each has a specific purpose in the life cycle of these cicadas who have been underground. They've been living underground for 17 years, ready to come up just to sing, fly, mate, and die. They've been preparing for this. You know, you could share in the revelry by just taking the time to really take it all in.
The name of the book is Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. It is published by St. Martin's Press. David Rothenberg, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the book, Bug Music, How Insects Gave Us Rhythm and Noise. It is published by St. Martin's Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.